welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Sometimes I forget our geographical connections, not me and you, but the team. You, some time ago, recommended an addition to the team, Julie Masson, who lives in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Great recommendation. I mean, she's doing an incredible job on our team, and I get to meet with her virtually at least once a week. And this week we're recording this, we're actually meeting two different times. And I forget the geographical connection there. Kansas City and also Midwestern Seminary.
She knows a lot of those guys over there.
Oh, I know. That's what reminded me of it during our Zoom teleconference yesterday. Julie said, yeah, I was talking to some folks from Midwestern. It just hit me. That didn't have to be a Zoom meeting. It could have been, but it could have been in person too. So we got Julie in Kansas City, and we got one of our wonderful sponsors, Midwestern Seminary in Kansas City.
Yep, and their MDiv program is their flagship degree program. It's the primary track for ministry preparation, and it's just 81 hours, but the Midwestern MDiv offers a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City as you train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church, or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. Why not start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv? And speaking of Kansas City, the burnt ends and the brisket up there, greatest in the world.
I wondered how long it'd take to go to food.
Man, that's my favorite part of Kansas City. I love Midwestern, but I love burnt ends more.
Is that superior to any barbecue in Nashville, or is it just different?
It's different, but I think the burnt end is maybe my favorite type of barbecue.
Is it really burnt, and is it really the end?
Just the double-cooked brisket.
Okay.
It's amazing.
I can eat briskets, but I'm not a huge brisket fan.
Burnt ends. Oof.
So
I'm hungry. Of course, I stay hungry.
Yeah, me too. I understand that. At Church Answers, we get a lot of questions. That's the whole purpose of Church Answers.
You got church questions, we've got church answers.
And it is an incredible place where a couple of thousand right now and growing numbers of church leaders, many of them pastors, multiple denominations, non-denominations, but many of them staff persons, and getting a little bit of representation of laypersons who are actually coming onto the forum as well and asking questions. And what is neat is they ask these questions 24/7. And sometimes I'll wake up at 5:30 in the morning and I'll go right to the forum, and there are three or four questions that somebody asks, presuming that they're in similar time zones as me, from midnight to 5 a.m. So they're asking these questions 24/7, and they get a response usually within a couple hours, but always a guarantee within 24 hours. And I'm just thinking of all the questions that have come. And if I were to put a category, oh, by the way, we're about to do something with Church Answers. It's the it's the semi-annual opening of Church Answers, and we've got a big masterclass coming to talk about. So we'll be, is that February 26th for the masterclass. So you'd be looking for that. I think you're going to be fascinated. Yeah. Absolutely.
Go over to the Facebook page, Tom Rainer's Facebook page.
Yeah.
Find the information there.
I think you're going to be really enjoy the masterclass. One of the favorite I've ever done. Got to say, it's in my top five or six favorites of masterclasses I've ever done. If I were to put all of them into a category, all of them being all of the questions, and I were to say, what's one of the most frequently asked? It has to do with relationships on church staff. Last night, of course, we pre-record these, so it would have been, by the time you're listening to this, it would have been 2 or 3 weeks ago. But I was on the board last night, and someone said, I am in a small church, and I think he said under 100.
Okay.
Which is not unusual, because 75 to 85 is the
It's a normative size church.
It's a normative size church for churches across North America. So he's in this small church, and he said, for the size of my church, I have three or four incredible musicians, and they lead worship, and they don't want any compensation. They just love what they're doing. So in terms of volunteer staff, this pastor has the worship leader. Then he said, a wealthy church member came up to me and said, decide what you want your next staff member to be, and I will fund it. 100%. Whatever the compensation will be, we'll get a full-time staff member. And so— you know what the question he asked? What staff member should I get?
Uh-huh.
At the time, and I haven't checked it this morning, but at the time I was responding last night, 100% children's minister.
Oh, really?
100%, said children's minister. So those are the type of questions we get, staff questions. We're going to go now to the negative side. We're going to talk about staff conflict because we get a lot of questions on staff conflict as well.
All right. So we have six of the most common reasons for staff conflict today. And the first one's a biggie, lack of alignment.
I can remember my first staff conflict as a pastor that would have been of a significant nature, and it was someone I actually brought on the team.
Oops.
So it was not like, oh, I'm inheriting this mistake, and we'll be talking about that before we finish this podcast. I hired someone, I'm not going to even say the position because since I had four churches and it wouldn't take too long to figure it out. But here was the situation. We had a significant ministry philosophical difference, not theological, but how you do things and how you carry them out day by day. And when I interviewed him, it just demonstrates my utter stupidity. I didn't ask those type of questions like, you know, this would have been an easy one. Tell me the first two or three things you think would be the most important things you'll do once you come into this position.
That's a good question.
If I had asked that, I would have found out.
Yeah.
His were not wrong. Mine were not wrong.
They were just different.
They were different. I sensed the church needed an emphasis in another direction. That was not who he was. If I had told him that, he would not have accepted the position.
So the conflict's on both sides.
It is. And he was a man of integrity. And about 3 to 4 months into his tenure there, he ended up staying a couple of years, but 3 to 4 months into it, he came to me and he said, I don't think we're on the same page. That's the word for not being aligned.
Yeah.
And he, total integrity. So we talked to that. I said, we're not. And I said, man, I felt terrible because he had moved.
Yeah.
He had brought his family. And he said, I tell you what, this just shows you the integrity of the staff person. He said, let's try to balance it. Neither one of us are going to be happy with balancing two different philosophies, but let's don't tilt too much one toward the other. Okay. And he said, I will slowly begin to look for other alternatives. I mean,
wow.
He ended up leaving the church because he was not aligned with the pastor. And from my perspective, it was 80% my fault. Now, he could have asked the question too, obviously, in the interview. But as the leader—
Well, that's just a little side point there. Ask the question in the interview.
Yeah.
You need to ask, like if you're going on as a, say, education or even youth ministry, those kind of things. Or if you're going on as a pastor.
Yes.
Ask the question of either the search committee, the pastor, whoever you're going to be reporting to, about philosophy of ministry. That's a very important question.
Yeah, and maybe philosophy is too general, but if you do something like, say, what are some of the priorities I should tackle right away? Mm-hmm. What are some of the urgent needs right away?
Yeah.
You'll begin to hear philosophy of ministry right there.
Yeah.
And the red flags, the yellow flags, or the green flags will begin to fly very clearly.
Well, I know Beth has talked to churches here and there from time to time.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to children's ministers, a lot of different philosophies, especially whenever you start talking about small groups, home groups, those kind of things, that philosophy of ministry and how best kids ministry works in that.
Oh, in the context of a group's ministry.
Yeah. And, wow. and these are questions that she's, you know, talked to them about and been like, well, you know what? That's not a good fit for me. That's not what I'm good at. That's not one of my strengths. I'm not even going to go into this situation because I know it's not going to be a good fit for alignment for me or the church.
Mm, wow, that's good.
So getting that in on the front end, I think that's a reason or that's a way you can avoid one of these reasons for staff conflict. Number two, resentment toward inherited staff. You touched on this.
Yeah, and this some people think that there's a blanket answer to that. And the blanket answer for some people would everybody should offer their resignation or everybody should leave before, for example, the pastor gets there. You know, that's one extreme. And the other extreme is the pastor must keep everyone on staff.
Well, this is a two-way thing, the inherited staff thing, because the resentment can be toward the inherited staff. And it also be from the inherited staff toward the new guy.
Toward the pastor because all of a sudden it feels like everything is changing. So I don't see this as a blanket answer. I do think this, the sooner the pastor can begin to get to know the staff and begin to articulate things, the more quickly that can work out, even if it results in a staff person saying over time, like my particular staff person that I mentioned, saying, this isn't going to work out. Let's make it as palpable as possible for right now, and then we'll move on. So one of the things you can do in these situations is just start to spend time with them. And as you spend time with them, you can say, we're not on the same page. Or you're not going in the direction I'm going. Or maybe your work ethic is not what I want.
You're skipping ahead.
That could go. I know I am, but they're overlap.
Yeah.
I mean, lack of alignment, resentment toward inherited staff, and then we get to work ethic and those things.
Number three, resentment of work ethic. We'll combine these two.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that. Let's suppose a pastor comes in, and that pastor is obviously, and this is unusual, but I'm going to say it. Pastors, you know I'm one of your biggest supporters, but let's say that pastor has about a 20-hour work ethic a week, and the pastor is doing sermon prep, and then that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a few other things.
Yeah, meeting with people, having lunch, just kind of palling around.
Yep.
Pastoral care,
meeting with the greens, golf green.
Yeah. That was air quotes with the pastoral care folks.
I saw it too. And the staff is used to this. Again, I don't want to put work ethic in terms of number of hours work a week, but just as a matter of illustration, 60-hour work week.
Mm-hmm.
And they're killing it over here, and they see this pastor just bumming it out. That causes resentment. And it can happen the other way too.
Yeah.
You can inherit a staff person who was coasting under previous leadership, and now the new pastor comes in and says, you know, this is not working. So all of these.
Well, but that one, I'm just going to point on that one. That one can also happen whenever you've got people coming in at the same levels. It doesn't have to just be pastor and
that's true.
Maybe the music guy or youth guy, whatever it may be. It could be you've got a new youth person and they kind of are resentful of the work ethic of the music person or vice versa.
Yes.
Whatever it may be.
Yeah,
all the youth guy does is go hang out with the kids all day, doesn't do any work and whatever. Or, you know.
I've seen that. And I think that everybody who serves on a church staff, particularly if it's a full-time position, meaning 45, 50 hours a week, I think everybody has their idea of what a good work ethic is. But that's within a narrow scope. We all know when someone has a poor work ethic.
Well, except for the guy with the poor work ethic. You guys are just working too hard. That's all. You're not.
I'm not so sure because I have seen those with the poor work ethic try to cover it. And if they're trying to cover it, that means they know they have something to cover.
I got you.
So most of the time, the poor work ethic is self-evident, not just other evident.
All right. Number four, Dr. Rainer, hiring friends.
Oh boy. I'm just cringing on this because I've made that mistake. I've hired well, I've hired poorly. Let's think about the advantage of hiring friends. Okay. It is a good possibility that they will be loyal to you.
Dr. Wagner, good example.
Dr. Wagner is a very good example. It is possible that you have seen their work up close and you know them. It is possible that you know their families well, so that you know that the family issue is going to be solid. So there are many, many reasons why this works. But hear me well on this. Don't hire a friend if you're not willing to fire a friend. Because they need to be under the same type of guidelines, same level of accountability as anybody else. Otherwise, you start practicing extreme favoritism. And
that causes conflict.
Oh, you know, that goes back to...
Well, the resentment, inherited staff, or whatever it may be. Resentment, lack of work ethic.
All of those issues. For example, let's suppose you hire a friend and you have a good idea. You think you have a good idea of how that friend's going to serve. And then they get under your leadership, and because they feel protected, maybe, they begin to be slack. They abuse their relationship with you. Their work ethic is highly suspect, probably not even suspect. It's probably just lousy. And all of a sudden, you're saying, what have I gotten myself into? And it's rare. It is extremely rare that a friendship survives where you've brought them on and then you've had to tell them it's not working out. So I am not against hiring friends, but on the other hand, I would be extremely careful about hiring friends. There are some advantages, but if it doesn't work out, the pain is exacerbated compared to anybody else. And I've been there on both ends of this.
All right, number five is tribalism. You're going to explain this one.
Well, tribalism means that staff members begin to align together.
Oh, so you get cliques. Little pockets of cliques.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad.
And you'll see this in particularly some of the you know, churches that have four or five staff persons. So you have this clique over here, and
they're all going to lunch together.
They're going to and they're talking.
Yeah.
And see, I'm using my hands now to show talking. This is a podcast, Rainer. Get it right. You got Jonathan's air quotes and my mouth signs. So these people begin to align together instead of being for the church or the organization. They're for each other. And you can begin to point out who's on whose team. And you may have two, you may have three. And there are times on this that you have two or three and the pastor's not on any of them.
Oh.
Or you may have a staff member that is an outlier and feels left out. That's an outlier, feels left out. And so tribalism means that it goes back to number one. There's lack of alignment for the greater purpose, which is for the church. That sounds like Midwestern.
Yeah.
It's for the organization. It is for the place where you are serving. So tribalism can take place when you could call these cliques, or you could call them staff cliques, whatever you want to, but that's what happens.
All right. And finally, the failure to connect personally.
Yep. There are good people, people that have good work ethics, people who are men or women of integrity, that for some reason, the chemistry does not work. When I begin to talk about who you should hire, I come up really with three C's immediately. The first C is character. They have to have a biblical sense of character. But before competency is my third one, is chemistry. Because if I think I cannot work with someone, why do I even want to see what their skill set is?
Yeah.
And now, can you always know chemistry? Probably not. You probably won't until you have that close working relationship. But that's one of the reasons that I would say the interview process is critically important, and perhaps even some personality inventories.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. Had I known in a situation, going back to hiring friends, had I known the personality disposition of the mistake I made, I can guarantee you I would not have hired that person, because their personality, and again, I'm not going to get into the details of the particular inventory I would have used, their personality was so distant from anything that we needed on our team at the particular time. If I had just seen that, I would have said, okay, this is at least a yellow flag, if not a red flag.
Yeah.
So I didn't see that personality until we began to work together. And that's just another issue, going back to friends, personality, resentment, all those things. There's another major issue. How your social relationships unfold may be significantly different once you have a working relationship. Sometimes you never really get to know someone like you think you know them until you work together. And, you know, I look at our team. We're far from perfect. And I'm thinking about—
Not close.
I'm thinking about the team Rainer, and I'm specifically referring to the Nashville team,
yeah,
which would be Amy, Jonathan, and Tom. And we've had our conflicts, we've had our issues, but most of the time it has been a team that not only respects one another, but likes working together. And so we have the right work ethic, but we also have the right chemistry too. It's just amazing to see. We got Jonathan that's just always working on 50 things at one time and pulling all these pieces together. You got Rainer who's coming up with too many ideas,
yep,
to execute.
Amen.
All the time. You've got Amy T that never has an unspoken opinion, and it's usually pretty loud, but just works right well. And then you have Amy J, this the constant, consummate servant, just trying to—
She's a glue that keeps us running.
In many ways, she is.
Together.
Yeah, but because I can't say for any of us it's all about us, but for her, it's just, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? And sometimes I say, stop doing that. That's not your role. But the thing about it is we're connected professionally, but we're also connected personally as well. Staff conflict, let's talk about solving the situation before we begin to thank Vanderbloom and our sponsor. What are some things that you can do? Extensive interview process.
I was going to ask about that.
Yep.
Because it seems like the more you interview somebody, the more you get to know.
Yep.
Hiring somebody after one interview is kind of— It'd be a little dangerous,
and
says the guy who was hired at Lifeway after one interview.
Well, it worked out fine. Let's think about the office interview. The office interview is significantly different than the lunch interview. The lunch interview begins to show a little more of the personal, open side because of the atmosphere. So, for example, if I'm hiring you, I may take you to lunch, or if I'm hiring Amy J, I wouldn't take her to lunch by myself, but we might have two or three of us, four or five of us, mm-hmm, going. How people respond in that setting is significantly different than just in the office setting. So that's one thing. There are a plethora of personality type of inventories that are out there. So you can see where your current team is and their personality and how this person may or may not fit in. And then take references seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, really take references seriously. Don't just go to the list they gave. Ask someone on that list if you know anybody that's not on this list that you may talk to as well. Yeah. And so you can dig one layer. Those are three things that you can do.
Yeah.
So those are my thoughts. I know we've got to thank Vanderblumen for being our great sponsor for all of these years.
Yes, and our friends at Vanderblumen Search Group help churches and ministries build great teams by finding their key staff. But did you know they also have a ton of resources focused on team building that could help us in this situation right here?
There you go.
Their newest addition is the Culture Tool. It's a free comprehensive staff engagement survey to help you build, run, and keep a great team. It's brand new, and you can check it out at theculturetool.com and be on the cutting edge of this new tool that will help improve your church staff culture. Visit theculturetool.com to learn more. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Now, for clarity, I know it's in the show notes. Is it The Culture Tool?
TheCultureTool.com. Yes.
And boy, doesn't that fit well.
Yeah, it does. And I have to check it out, see if it could be used in that interview process.
There you go. So two things, two major resources, Vanderblumen's, theculturetool.com, and then we have a new wave of church answers coming to you, and we'll have a masterclass. So go to Facebook and find out more about that.
All right. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app, and join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.